And thanks again to everyone who's read, helped us open the meeting, and take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. Big welcome to any visitors to our meeting this evening. We're really glad you're here, and a huge welcome to any newcomers that might be with us tonight. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. So we are a speaker meeting, and it's going to fall on me tonight to introduce our speaker. I don't know a huge amount about this individual, I have to be honest. We've kind of encountered each other over the last few years on the dreaded social media. I've always liked what he's had to say. And then he called me up and invited me to his home group to share in the middle of the night. I can't remember if it was just before or just after Christmas. I honestly can't remember. It's a bit of a blur, but there it is. And we got talking. I realise we have a huge amount in common. We have a lot of similar interests, all sorts of different things. I liked what he had to say. I respect anyone that's willing to be of service to Narcotics Anonymous. I know that James has been. So without further ado, I'm going to invite James, Jim G, to share with us his experience, strength and hope, his journey into and through Narcotics Anonymous for the next 40 or 45 minutes, whatever he's comfortable with. So, James, over to you, my friend. The floor is yours. Please share with us.
I'm an addict, Jim. And
hi, Jim.
Hi, Jim.
Welcome.
Hi, Jim.
Hello, Jim.
Great name.
Wow. Thank you. I'd like to first of all thank Steve and this group for having me speak here. And it's also kind of fun to run into Jay, one somebody I've known for many, many years, which kind of helps me realize that no matter how large Narcotics Anonymous is, it's still kind of a small community in some ways. I was thinking a little bit about sharing, and for me, when I know a few days in ahead that I'm going to share about something, I generally spend a little bit of time thinking about it. And I was remembering the first time I shared, it was like around January 1982, and I was in Miami, I lived there for many years, and that's where I got clean. I was clean a couple of months, and someone asked me to share at this H&I meeting. And I was just all over myself that they'd asked me, and I went in. And I probably gave, the longest, biggest BS drug log that's ever been shared. And, a few days later, I realized that probably they had already asked it for seven people who couldn't make it, and so I was probably the eighth or ninth choice. But I kind of learned something from that, and what I kind of learned was that with a couple of months, I knew some about recovery, but I didn't know a lot about recovery. And the relationship of what I knew about using to what I knew about not using was, very, very a huge difference. And so today, I want to kind of stay away from that, other than to just say that, I did start using when I was 13, and starting at 13 up until the time I found Narcotics Anonymous, I did what most of us have either done or thought about doing. And, I've been in the jails, and I've been in the institutions, and I've had the overdoses and stuff like that. And I guess, which is kind of interesting, because had I not had those things happen, I would have never found Narcotics Anonymous. But in October of 1981, I was arrested in Miami. I was driving down a big highway in Miami called South Dixie Highway. And I was really loaded, doing my favorite kind of drugs. I like drugs that made me nod out, because if I was asleep, I didn't have to deal with myself and I didn't have to deal with anyone else. And I was all over the road, and I got pulled over and I went to jail. And the next day I got out, I got bonded out. And I was living way down in South Dade. So it was about a 3-hour bus ride, I guess, because my car was impounded. And so I'm riding from downtown Miami to South Dade. And I remember it being like a 2 or 3 hour bus ride. It was real long. And I'm sitting on the seat looking at my reflection in the window. And, you know, my hair was like down to my waist. I weighed about 125 pounds. I looked kind of like a zombie. And I was hopeless. I was absolutely hopeless. I didn't know what to do. I just didn't know what to do. So somewhere in there, I realized that, you know, the year before, I had been arrested for the very same thing, and I had been sent to like an outpatient program. And I always did well in treatment programs and stuff. I could say back what you wanted to hear, and I could sound good and stuff like that. I had that chameleon quality. And so I thought, well, maybe I'll give that guy a call. And so I called the guy, the therapist, and asked him if I could come in and see him. And he said, sure. So I went in and told him basically the same thing. You know, I was sick and tired of being sick and tired, but I really believe that lie that once you're a junkie, once you're a drug addict, you're always. And so he suggested several things. He said, first of all, I said, okay, well, let's put you in a hospital in a 30-day treatment program. I said, well, you know, you can't do that. I don't have any money and I don't have any insurance. Said, okay. Well, then let's put you in a TC, you know, a free place. And I said, well, I can't do that because I had a job, because technically I did. I was working down in Key Largo, construction job, lasted for 3 or 4 more weeks. Well, I can't do that. I got a job. And he said, okay, well, I want you to go to this 12-step program. And he mentioned the program. And I said, well, why would I go there? I don't have that problem. So he says, okay, come and see me 3 times a week. So I started doing that. And about the second weekend, he said, listen, I heard about something you might be interested in. I said, yeah, what's that? He said, well, I don't know much about it, but it's a group of people. It's called Narcotics Anonymous. And as soon as he said Narcotics Anonymous, my ears picked up because I figured anything that had to do with narcotics might not be a bad idea, you know? And if it was narcotics and it was anonymous at the same time, I mean, this is sounding kind of good. So he says, I don't know much about it, but they meet over here at this church on Tuesday night, and you go over there and you ask for Fred, he'll get you in. You know, and this is sounding like cop and dope to me. You know, you go down to the Third Street alley and you find Joe and you give him your money. So I'm thinking, okay, this doesn't sound bad. So I said, okay. So I went over, and of course there was nobody there by that name, but I went in and I sat down in that meeting. And it was November 3rd, 1981. And it was a life-changing event for me. Sit in this room with about 12, 15 other people, and I listened. And I don't really know what they said, but I listened. And I think drug addicts have a built-in BS meter. And I think that's one of the reasons why we survive for so long as we do, because we know when somebody's blowing smoke up us, you know? I mean, we just know. And I'm listening closely to what people are saying, and my meter's not going off. And I'm believing what you guys are saying, okay? And that night, I was given two of the greatest gifts that I have ever been given in my life. The first gift was the gift of hope. I listened to you all share, and I thought maybe, just maybe, if these people can get clean, maybe I can too. And the second gift I got that night was the gift of acceptance. You all asked me to come back. No one wanted me back. No one wanted me. You didn't want me at your house. If you did, I'd go through your medicine cabinet and steal your drugs. I'd take money. No one wanted me. And you guys asked me to come back. And somehow that night, your message managed to find its way around all these barriers that I had built around myself and around my heart, that I thought these barriers were impenetrable and no one could get to them. And somehow or another, your message of recovery and your message of hope and your message of one addict helping another and the love of one addict for another managed to find its way through all those barriers, the cracks and the little holes in them. And it got to my heart and it just gave it a little ting. And that little ting sparked that hope in me. And it wasn't a big kumbaya moment, and you know, it wasn't any of that, but it was just for the first time in my life, I felt connected. I had never felt connected to my family. I had never felt part of my family. I had never felt like I belonged to my family, my friends, or no one. And that night, I felt a connection that I had never felt before. So I started going to meetings of Narcotics Anonymous. And it was not easy for me. I'd always been a loner in my using. Even in my recovery, I tend to spend a lot of time by myself. And it was difficult because when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I didn't like me and I sure as hell didn't like you. I didn't like anyone. And yet, like I said, there was that little sense of hope and that little sense of connection. So I started doing the stuff, and it was an exciting time to be in recovery in Narcotics Anonymous in South Florida. In the south part of the county where I live, we had like 3 meetings a week. And everyone knew everyone, and we'd go out after the meetings, and it was great. But I would go out with people after the meeting, you know, and they would go to eat, and I would sit down at the end of the table because, like I said, I didn't like me, and I didn't like you. So, I didn't have anything to talk about because beyond, you know, do you have any money or do you have any dope or screw you, I wasn't much of a conversationalist. And so I'd sit there, and I'd watch my watch, you know, and at 10 o'clock I'd say, well, I got to go because I got to go to work because technically I still didn't have that job that last for a few more weeks. And so I did that, and I started going to meetings every night of the week. And I realized that, you know, I was told to go to 90 and 90, and to go to 90 and 90, that means I had to go someplace else on the nights there wasn't an NA meeting. And I went, and I had a few good experiences, but I had a lot of experiences that helped me to understand that that wasn't my home, that wasn't where I belonged. And we became very busy with Narcotics Anonymous, and we got meetings started and stuff, and it was great. And I started getting involved with service, you know, and I did a coffee job at like the largest meeting in South Miami on Friday nights. We'd get like 80 people there, and it was probably the most important job I've ever had in my life. So I did it for a year or more, y'all gave me the key to this hospital building. You know, me, a thief, a liar, and a cheat. And I've got the key to let myself into this office building. But I did it. And I went in and I would set the meeting up and I would make the coffee and I'd set the literature up and I'd make the, you know, I was so obsessed. I would do pamphlet number one, pamphlet number two, pamphlet number three, and I'd make them all in line and everything. And set the chairs up and they were perfectly straight. And at the end of the meeting, I made sure everything was clean and put away the way it was supposed to be. And I got to know a lot of people, and I got that feeling of being part of, a little bit more being part of. And I continued to do that, and I did a lot of stuff with service and did a lot of different things through the service structure up until I was almost 4 years clean, and then I relapsed. And I couldn't figure out what happened. You know, I just didn't understand what happened. You know, I knew people everywhere. I spoke everywhere. I sponsored a lot of people, and I just couldn't figure it out. I just, you know, I thought, what happened? You know, just what happened? And I started a 2-year relapse for me. And the first thing I did in my relapse was I met a newcomer in a meeting, and we hooked up, got married. Had a kid, then had another kid, and it was 30-something years ago, and we're still together, which, you know, against all odds. But anyway, I spent 2 years, and I just couldn't get it together. I got another sponsor when I was about 6 months into my relapse, and he became my rock forever until he passed in 2009 of natural causes. And he was just solid. He was always there for me. And I never stopped going to meetings during my 2-year relapse because I knew that if I couldn't get clean in Narcotics Anonymous, there was just no hope for me. And people told me, they said, well, why don't you go to the Southern Fellowship? Nobody knows you. Be anonymous here. I said, if I can't get clean with the people that I would use with, then I got no hope, you know? And finally, at the end of 2 years, my sponsor and my wife sat down, and this isn't an endorsement or anything, it's just my story, what happened. And my sponsor and wife sat me down, and my sponsor said to me, look, if I don't get you off the street, you're going to be dead. And I said, okay. And so I went into a program, and almost everybody working in that program I had watched come into the program. And, you know, my heart really goes out to them today, because I never felt judged by them or put down or anything. I just felt the acceptance and love of one addict to another. And I came out of that program. So anyway, my day of getting clean was 12/12/87. And I haven't had the need to use since then. And I came out of that program, and I didn't know what to do. You know, I was just, you know, I was just lost. I was almost like a lost sheep. But I had this fantastic sponsor, and he was always there. And if I didn't know whether to turn right or left, I'd call him. His name was Jim. Also, hey, Jim, do I turn right or left? He'd say left, and I'd turn left. I just didn't question it. And so I started going back to work, I went to meetings. I went to a lot of meetings, like sometimes 2-3 a day. And then I was able to start going to work, and I started working and stuff like that. And so it began a process for me of trying to answer some questions, you know, about myself and for myself. Because like I said, I just... You know, I didn't know. I just didn't know. And I was in the Living Clean the other day, and I'm going to read this one little passage from it, because this is, in my opinion, just an awesome book. And this is from chapter 6, and it says, "We have this in common. We want to be free. We want to feel accepted and respected without pretending to be anything other than who we are, no matter what our accomplishments. The principles by which we live will sustain or destroy us." And I didn't understand that back then, okay? And I didn't understand that the principles that I was living during my, up to the point where I relapsed, were not principles of hope and not principles of recovery. Well, not all of them. Many of them were. I'm not saying I was a jerk, you know, but I had some issues. And it took me about 2 years after being clean before I really figured out what the tipping point for my relapse was. And the tipping point was, I just didn't trust. I did not trust. You know, my sponsors were good people, always there for me, always steady, always just right on, spot on with the things that we talked about and stuff. But there was always part of me that I held back. Okay, and I held back because I thought I would be judged. And it wasn't a lot of, you know, kind of wonky stuff. It was simple stuff like I was trying to work myself. I didn't know how to charge people. I didn't know how to collect money. I didn't know how to do all of these things to sustain my, and I kept going further and further and further in the hole. And all I would have had to do was ask someone, you know, and there were a lot of people who knew how to do that stuff that I know would have helped me figure it out, but my pride and my ego and my image wouldn't let me do it, because I thought everybody else knew how to do that, and I should know how to do it. And I didn't trust people enough to tell them that. And so I started working on my trust issues, and I started working on that a lot with my sponsor, and I trusted my sponsor. My sponsor was the kind of guy who would say, "Jim, just call me anytime. And if you need me, just let me know, whether to bring money or my pistol, I'm there," you know. And that was the kind of guy he was. And so I started working on those issues and spending a lot of time with him and looking at the steps and looking at myself. And my first 2 years back in recovery, I really didn't share in meetings. I listened. I listened a lot. I had shared a lot up to my relapse, okay? I was good at talking. I was good at understanding the literature and talking about it and all that stuff, but it was obvious I had missed something, okay? It was obvious I missed the fact that I did not completely work that first step, okay? So I listened, and I listened, and I listened, and I listened, and I learned ever so much by doing that, and I felt even closer to people in the program. Coming back after relapsing was not easy. I felt very judged, and it probably had a lot to do with the fact that I was judging myself very severely. So anyway, I just went to meetings, and I just did what I was supposed to do. And I had some resentment against people because of the way I had felt I had been treated or whatever. And my sponsor would tell me, he said, Jim, go to the meeting. Park your resentment at the door. Go in, set the ass in the chair, and listen to the meeting. And he said, the meeting starts. You need to be there at the beginning of the prayer, the first prayer, and still seated in there at the end of the last prayer. And he says, when you go there, you're there for one reason only. You're not there to find a job. You're not there to find a relationship. You're not there to find a place to live. You're there to listen to the message of hope from the addict that's sharing. And when you leave, you can pick your resentment up and take it with you. And I did that for a little while. And then one day I realized that, I don't know, somewhere along the line, I'd left my resentment outside the door of Narcotics Anonymous meeting one time. And I didn't even know where I'd left it. And what was so funny was after that, shortly after that, some of the people that had some resentments towards came and they talked to me and they said, Jim, you know, it just scared us so bad that when you relapse, it just frightened us, you know. And anyway, things got good. And so I found out that what was important for me was to let go of it. And once I let go of it, it didn't matter anymore, you know. Let you know, the cosmos take its own path. Let it go its own direction. So anyway, I started doing some stuff for myself. I did a little bit of service. I've always been involved with service at Narcotics Anonymous, but it was very, you know, back at the group level and stuff like that. But then I started doing some stuff for myself. By now I had one child, I had another one on the way, and I went back to school and I started doing some things, and you know, and I got a degree, and I got another degree, and you know, and I started working, and I started doing all of these things, and becoming on the outside successful, but on the inside, I still didn't feel right. I was still that person after like 10, 12 years in recovery, who felt guilty eating the food out of the refrigerator that I had worked to buy to put in there because I didn't feel worthy, okay? I just didn't feel worthy. And, you know, I just kept with the program, and I kept practicing principles, and I kept trying to get a better understanding of the spiritual nature of Narcotics Anonymous, because today I really believe in the spirituality of Narcotics Anonymous. I believe that the same original energy that created me created everyone else, and that we share that, and that we share these things that are, I just got some message telling me that, I don't know, I might get dropped or something, I don't know. So anyway, if I get lost, you know, it wasn't me. So anyway, and I began to believe in those things more and more, and I continued my spiritual practices, which, you know, I had been doing for a long time off and on, even when I was using and trying to get a better understanding. And the more I began to get an understanding of that, the more and more I began to understand what you guys had told me in the very first, and that was recovery is an inside job. Okay? The answers are in the steps. And all the time, where I go, every time I get in a jam or a jackpot, I always end up reverting back to the basic stuff that I was told. And I really am a firm believer that if I never leave the basics of Narcotics Anonymous, then I don't have to worry about getting back to them. So anyway, as I continued to do these things, what I found was that things were changing. And they were changing on the outside. But the reason they were changing on the outside is because things were changing on the inside. And after, I don't know, 13, 14, 15 years, I began to understand that, you know what? I like myself, okay? I like myself. And then it went on from that to be able to reach a point where I had a loving kindness towards myself in the sense that I really tried to take care of myself. And I tried to take care of myself, and I tried to take care of my relationships with other people, and I really tried to live the principles of Narcotics Anonymous, because what I've grown to believe, and like I say, everything I say is just based on my experience, what I've grown to believe is that the steps are important. The steps are vital. The steps are critical. But it's the principles behind them that are what I want to live. And when I have a problem with something, I turn to the steps. What I'm looking to do is find that directional arrow back to that principle that I'm missing. Is it honesty? When I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I was told, the principle behind the first step is honesty. I didn't go, wow, what a concept. Why didn't somebody tell me about honesty before? This is so cool. No, I've known about honesty all along. I just thought it was a game for suckers. You know, I just didn't see any need to it. I mean, why? You know, I always needed to spin things to what I thought was my best advantage. And in recovery, I did not just turn a light switch on and go to being honest or go to being willing or go to being open-minded. And so all of these things came slowly and slowly and slowly over time. But they came slowly and slowly and slowly over time because on a daily basis, I do the footwork necessary to work on those things. And I keep that the direction that I want to move in. My sponsor that, you know, I was talking about earlier, he told me one time, he said, Jim, he said, at the end of the night, there's only one question that's important. And that question is this. Did you move closer to that power greater than yourself today, or did you move away from that power greater than yourself today? If you move closer to that power greater than yourself, you're probably doing something right. If you moved away, then you damn well better take a good look at what you're doing. And so I try to make that a guiding light in my life. And how do I know whether I'm moving in that direction or not? Well, I can do an inventory, okay? But I know before that whether I need to take the inventory or not, because I lose my feeling of serenity. And for me, serenity is simply feeling at ease in my own body, feeling comfortable and at ease in my own body, regardless of where I am or who I'm with. So if I'm with a bunch of people with tons of money, I'm Jim. If I'm on the street with people that are ragged and no money, I'm still Jim. And I try to be that same Jim no matter where I am. And in doing these things, I have found for me what I believe is the center of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, the saying, you know, if you stay in the center of Narcotics Anonymous, you won't fall off the edges. Well, I used to think that that meant that, you know, having 14 different service positions and, you know, being out at meetings all the time and the service stuff and all this stuff, and you were in the center of the program because everyone. But I've come to understand that's not really the meaning that I associate with it. And what I associate with the Center of Narcotics Anonymous today is the heart of one addict feeling the heart of another addict. My sponsor that I talked about is kind of interesting. Before he passed, he had some kind of a brain tumor, and he was teaching at a class, and he just passed out in the floor. And anyway, so went to the hospital and he had some surgery and they removed the tumor, but I don't think they got everything, so they had him on some medication. And so for the next 2 years, whenever I'd see him, it was very funny, like we'd go out to eat, for instance, and we'd get fish, and he would say, you know, this is weird. Before that tumor, I hated fish, and now I love it. But I have some really great memories of him, and he's still my sponsor in many ways. I don't know about any of you guys. Every person that's ever sponsored me still sits on that sponsorship committee in my head. But anyway, one of the things that he always did after that, and that I continue to do with people, is when we would hug, he would always say heart to heart. And to me, that's what the therapeutic value of one addict helping another addict is. It's the therapeutic value of one addict being able to go past all the facade, all the mask and stuff, and understand without necessarily having to say a word that all I really need is a hug. Or maybe all I really need is someone to listen to me. Or maybe all I really need is someone to sit with me for a little while. You know, and those kind of things. And these are the kind of things that I've learned as I've gone along. So anyway, I want to kind of watch the time. Anyway, so, you know, my life continued, and I ended up getting these degrees, and I ended up working for the school system in Dade County in Miami. And, you know, and I did well. And anyway, in 2013, I had a heart attack, and, you know, went to the hospital and all this stuff. And during this procedure, they ended up putting some stents in my heart, my arteries, and the recovery things didn't go well, and I did a cold blue, and you know, they jerked my wife and son out of the room, and she said next thing she knew, like 50 people around me or something. But anyway, so I got through that, you know, and one of the things that I understood from that, and I know we talk about it, I hear people talk about it in meetings, I see memes about it and stuff like that, but I know it. Okay, I mean, I know it because I know it because I know it. And that is that I never know when I'm going to see someone else again. I don't know at this minute my wife is not doing some stuff that I will see her again. I just don't know that. So I make sure that before my wife left, we were good with each other. And I try to do that. I try to never leave any encounter with anyone with any forms of bad feelings or anger. Now, if I were a perfect person, I could probably be doing that 100%, but I'm not, and I can't. But I do it pretty well, you know. And these things are important. These things are important to me. I have three kids now. I've got four grandkids. When I got in Narcotics Anonymous, my biggest problems were, you know, finding a job and finding a girlfriend. And, you know, today they're much, much different. But anyway, so I had that heart attack, and I ended up retiring from work, and we ended up moving up to the mountains in North Carolina, and I like it there. Quiet, peaceful, much, much different than Miami. Although we find ourselves back in Miami a lot now, that's where I am right now. And I had another heart attack, and so, you know, each day I really try to practice that 11th step when it talks about we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. And to me, what that means is it doesn't mean that contact with God when I'm in a jackpot. It doesn't mean that contact with God when I wake up in the morning and I do a couple of readings and stuff like that. What that means is I'm conscious throughout the day. And what I want to understand is that energy that I believe in, that energy that I feel is so positive, is so loving and caring for me, that I stay in awareness of that 24/7 as much as possible. And I try to share that with the people that I come in contact with. Two or three years ago, my wife gave me a medallion for my anniversary. And she said something, I think about it sometimes, because it was kind of interesting. She said, you know, sometimes I think Jim loves Narcotics Anonymous more than he loves me. And, you know, I thought about that, and I don't know if I love Narcotics Anonymous more than I love her, but I am damn sure that I would not have her today if I did not have Narcotics Anonymous. Narcotics Anonymous has saved my life over and over and over again. I don't think realistically, I just never see myself not being a member of Narcotics Anonymous and participating with Narcotics Anonymous. I think I'll close now, because I think anything that I say after this is just forcing myself. I really do appreciate you being here. I appreciate and thank you again for allowing me to share heart to heart.